Chapter 19. The Benefits of Sneaking. Hiei let Trelawney pour water into his scrying dish, then took it back to his table and set it down. He flipped open his textbook with one hand, casually neglecting to let go of the bowl with his other hand as he flicked through the pages. Within minutes, the water was steaming.
"Hiei," Kuwabara whispered urgently. "Oi, Hiei!"
"What?" Hiei snapped. Kuwabara leaned closer over the table.
"Get a hold of yourself."
"What?" Hiei asked, glancing up. The instant he met Kuwabara's eyes, he sent a jolt of power through his hand. The water puffed into steam all at once, bursting from the dish and nearly into Kuwabara's face. The human squawked, shoving away from the hot cloud and falling back off his seat. Trelawney fluttered over, carrying her pitcher of water.
"I sense you are encountering difficulties, children," she pronounced solemnly.
Hiei looked into his dry bowl, quirking an eyebrow in faked confusion. His hand, palm pressed to the side of the thick metal dish, would convince any watchers that the cloud of steam had some sort of paranormal origin. Obviously, the dish couldn't simply be hot, since Hiei was holding it.
Sure. Seems that way, Professor,"
Kuwabara stammered nervously as he pulled himself back into his chair. He was staring at Hiei's bowl with a slightly wild-eyed look. Professor Trelawney tilted her head and ran her hand slowly through the space over both their heads. She murmured, her hand stilling over Hiei. Abruptly, she snapped her hand back, lifted the pitcher, and poured more water into Hiei's bowl. It hissed as it touched the metal, going up in steam and leaving the bowl bone dry.
"I see," she said, as she pulled the pitcher away.
She reached for the dish. Hiei quickly pulled the power back in, leaving the bowl cool enough to touch, and took it away.
"Your dark dragon dislikes the water,"
Trelawney announced. Hiei gave the woman a level stare. She was so easily manipulated. Now if she would just...
"We'll start you on mirrors early, Jiganshi," she told him kindly. "Next week. For now, you may as well go, as you will gain no insight from this lesson."
"Do that. Perfect." Hiei stuffed his book in his school bag, threw it over his shoulder, and stalked out.
"How did he do that?" Ron whispered to Harry. "And why did we never think of it?"
"I don't know, and I don't know," Harry answered. "But maybe with that core magic stuff?"
"What sort of core magic could do that?"
Harry shrugged. "The same kind that makes someone fireproof?" "And made them set their broomsticks on fire. Wait. Fire!"
"But Trelawney isn't fireproof," Ron said.
"I don't think. Though she sits up here with all this smoke all the time, and she didn't burn her hand on the dish.
I meant Hiei. But you're right about the bowl.
Maybe it wasn't fire after all." In the Defense Against Dark Arts classroom, Hiei easily sketched the kanji for observe on the blackboard doorknob of Genkai's door, and entered a cubicle high in the domed ceiling of the main arena room. This was what he'd gotten out of divination to see, Yukina's defense class running the hexing drill. He didn't trust these brats. Hell, he hadn't even met most of them. Who knew what weird hex they'd throw at his sister? Besides, he had to be there in case things got ugly. He'd managed to dodge the hexes on Monday, and therefore no one had cast finite incantim on him. But Yukina wasn't nearly as quick as him. If she glanced up at the wrong moment after finite, before she'd managed to secretly recast their eye charm, everyone would see her demonic red eyes. Botan and Keiko wouldn't be able to protect her from the fallout of that. This session was considerably better than theirs had been, he noticed after a few minutes. Whereas the Gryffindor-Slytherin drill had been little better than a free-for-all, this class had divided into recognizable, coherent teams, The tactics were uninspired. The teams were all sticking together, and at least one member of each team was magically shielding the group, or at least attempting to. But they all had tactics. It was beautifully ironic that the people you'd expect to be better in a fight, the brave Gryffindors and cunning Slytherins, were actually worse than the so-called bookworms and the wimps. Hiei made a mental note to tell Kurama. The fox would appreciate the humor. And the lesson. Harry idly kicked his feet in the air as he lay on his stomach on his bed. His History of Magic textbook opened before him. He'd long since quit actually trying to read the exceedingly dull text, and had taken to doodling, badly, in the margins. Somehow, random doodles of brooms and animals had morphed into a full-blown Quidditch game, with Pigwidgeon doubling as the snitch. The opposing team, made up of snakes, was getting pummeled 340-0, due to their lack of arms to throw the quaffle or hold bludgerbats. "Hey, Harry?" "Hmm?" Harry glanced up and turned his head towards Ron. The redhead lay on his stomach on his own bed and was fiddling with something small in his hands. Harry couldn't see what it was. "This core magic stuff. Do you, I don't know how to ask this. Is yours weird?" "I don't know," Harry answered honestly. "Professor Genkai couldn't test it. Why?" Ron was silent for a couple of seconds. Then he suddenly tossed the object he'd been toying with at Harry. Harry caught it easily with a seeker's reflexes. It was a chess piece. The White Queen. "What's this?" Harry asked. "That's what popped up when Genkai tested me," Ron answered. Harry blinked, surprised. Ron continued, "What sort of core magic is that? I mean, what good is it?" "I don't know," Harry said slowly. "In fact, what is it? Had Ron created this or something?" "Dunno," Ron shrugged. "I sort of got this image, and Genkai told me to carry a chess piece around for a week, but I don't know. It sounds stupid." Harry had to agree. It did sound weird. "Well, you chose a good piece," he offered. "Queen's the most versatile, right?" "Yeah," Ron said, leaning over to take it back. Then he blinked. "Are you running a fever or something?" "No, I feel fine." "Huh, I thought it felt warmer for a second there." Ron eyed the queen for a moment longer, then shook his head and shoved the piece back in his pocket. "Must have been my imagination." "Must have." Hiei slipped into the observation cubicle once more directly after dinner. With no one in the arena, the one-way window was dark, glazed over so Hiei couldn't see into the space. This was a protective measure. An empty shape-shifting room fell into a randomized amorphous state. The window Hiei was at could, at any given moment, be in the floor, walls, ceiling, or hovering anywhere in the room. The view from it would look like somebody had splinched a kaleidoscope with a lava lamp, then reflected the results in a funhouse mirror. Abruptly, the window cleared, showing the 10-meter-wide arena from the day Kurama had demonstrated core magic. Hiei set aside his homework as the door opened, and Genkai ushered in the Patil twins. She glanced up at the window and their eyes met, though Hiei knew there was a concealing charm hiding him. She quirked an eyebrow upwards in acknowledgement of his presence, though, and led the Patil girls to the arena floor. It would seem that she'd decided to do the younger pair first. Hiei watched as the two sat down, and Genkai spoke to them quietly. They glanced at each other, then replied, and Genkai moved around to stand behind them. She lifted both hands, one between the shoulder blades of each twin, and raised her ki. There must be strong wards up around the room. Hiei couldn't feel a thing, as a pale blue haze formed around Genkai's hands, thin tendrils looping around the girls' shoulders and seeping into them. Their hair and clothes began to flutter in a whirling breeze. Leaning closer, curious, Hiei saw the two slowly lift their arms, cupping their hands before them, Several wisps of white smoke streamed from their hands, coalescing into a globe the size of a basketball before each girl's face. A moment passed, then the white spheres cleared, showing two different images. In one, Ron Weasley sat on his bed, staring pensively at something small in his hand. In the other, two identical little red-headed boys, perhaps 7 years old, were on a toboggan, teetering at the top of a staircase, which shifted to a spiral just as the two leaned forward and the sled shot down. The blue haze faded, the globes winking out a second later, and Genkai stepped back, glancing up at Hiei's window. Hiei smirked. The two little boys in the globe were recognizably Fred and George a decade ago. So if the other girl's globe had been showing Ron as he was currently, they were showing present and past events. That could be a useful talent. Or a dangerous one. Hiei's smirk fell away. If the past globe, which belonged to the Gryffindor twin, Hiei noticed, as she stood and her house crest became visible, ever showed Hiei without his headband, or in his out-of-control green form, or if they saw Yoko, or any of the demon killings he and the other Tante had been responsible for, there was so much that they couldn't let anyone know about. He would have to either take the Patils himself, or make sure their tutor knew how to focus their training away from looking into the Tante's activities. Considering Kuwabara was the only other choice for a trainer, damn it. As the girls left, looking a bit dazed, the Weasley twins bounced into the room. One walked right up to Genkai, waving cheerfully, before clapping the old woman jovially on the shoulder. The other followed closely behind, smiling and saying something charming, judging by his expression. Genkai almost smiled, but brushed the first hand away with a curt order. The boys sat, then offered identical innocent expressions when Genkai pulled a strip of paper off her shoulder, where the first boy's hand had left it, and raised an eyebrow at them. A moment later, she'd explained the procedure, moving around behind them, repeating her actions from just a few moments before with the Patil twins. She drew the boys' core magic to the surface. A tangle of strands slowly became visible, emanating from both twins. They flowed and shifted, making web-like patterns through the room. One strand connected to the strip of paper. Several more slipped in and out of the boys' robes, threading through pockets. The rest faded out as they approached the walls. He blinked. What the hell was this? Yanking his headband off, he used the Jagan to peer more closely at the strands of power. Without the ward, he could now see that the lines didn't fade out within the arena, but instead stretched faintly through the walls, hair-thin ones flickering in and out of existence around the pair, squirming and pushing at Genkai and her power insistently. They kept slipping loose, though, unable to get a grip on her Reiki. As Hiei watched, completely bewildered, he realized several of the thickest strands were not so much disappearing into the walls as moving along it. One was stretched in his direction, creeping closer to the observation cubicle. Hiei switched his attention to that strand, and with some careful adjustment, looked through the floor and the magical weave of the building. Looking down it, he discovered, to his surprise, that it ended at the janitor, Filch. As quickly as he realized that, he remembered the strands of magical intent that he'd caught twice, his first night at the school. The first had tried to get him to leave the moving staircases before he saw the twins on their way to do mischief. The second had tried to keep him there after he'd seen them. What was this strand manipulating Filch to do? And more importantly, what were all the other strands doing? Were any of them attached to his teammates, compromising them? What would Hiei be doing right now if he hadn't noticed those first attempts to ensnare him? Genkai released the twins, stepping back with the most worried, serious expression Hiei had ever seen on the old woman. Fred and George turned, eager curiosity glowing in their eyes, until they caught sight of Genkai's face. Their own faces instantly mirrored the worry, as one started to ask something. The other finished the sentence, reaching out towards her. She waved them off, then visibly composed herself and began to speak.
Hmm. Hiei couldn't hear a thing here. Hurriedly rewrapping the cloth over his third eye, he left the cubicle and sketched a different character on the blackboard knob. He eased the door open just enough to slip through, closed it with a tiny snick, and darted into the air. There were a few shadowed spots in the ceiling dome, one of which offered a ledge to brace himself on, where the illusion hiding the observation window was. The twins, focused on Genkai, hadn't noticed him, and Hiei allowed himself a mental sigh of relief.
"Not done you any favors by testing you," Genkai was saying, her voice heavy. "And I have serious doubts about telling you."
"Our core magic? Is that scary?" They sounded incredulous. Hiei knew if he hadn't seen it with his own three eyes, he would never have believed the cheerful, popular pranksters had anything sinister to hide. But then, most people would say the same about Kurama. Genkai's gaze went flat.
"Yes."
They winced.
"I don't think we want to know," Fred said.
"Except that we can't do anything to avoid using it by accident if we don't know," George added more quietly.
"Or to avoid being used and manipulated."
Genkai raised an eyebrow, staring into their unusually serious faces for a long, silent moment.
"You are rogue class, also known as the luck class. Low-level manipulators of space, time, and circumstance."
"So we're lucky? That doesn't sound like much," Fred commented.
"Oh, it doesn't?" Genkai asked sharply. "You've never killed or seriously injured anyone. You hardly ever get caught, and you're even very well liked despite your reputation," Genkai added. "But just think if you didn't have the scruples you have. You could kill or wound whoever you wanted. You'd never get caught, and you'd still be well liked, despite the fact you were doing wrong," Genkai said. "Imagine a Death Eater with this power."
They paled.
"An Auror could fire Avada Kedavra point blank, and on Vra, he would trip over his own shoelace and hit the wrong target. Except the Auror would never do that, because the Death Eater would never fall under suspicion."
George, swallowing, murmured weakly,
"I think we've got the point, Professor."
She stared narrowly at them for a second longer.
"Dismissed."
They stood, nodded a farewell at her, then turned and slowly walked from the room. Fred caught his twin's hand and squeezed it.
"They'll expect our usual high spirits," he said quietly.
"What high spirits?" George muttered, before shaking his head as if to clear it.
"Right you are, Gred."
"Damn right, right I am. I'm always right. Except when you're arguing with me. Then you're always wrong." The door shut behind the falsely cheerful pair, and Hiei darted to the floor.
"What do you think, Hiei?"
Genkai asked quietly, fishing a cigarette from her pocket.
"I think I'll be keeping an eye on them." "Good."
Genkai gestured Harry into the chair before her desk, setting aside her teacup and taking up a couple of sheets of paper.
"Well, Potter, I read your essay. Not very academically inclined, are you?"
Well, he was no Hermione, but he wasn't that bad, was he?"
She gestured with the paper.
"You seem to have some rather ridiculous notions of core magic. Having useful friends is not a core magic. Accio is not a core magic, no matter how good you are with the charm. I had to go to Dumbledore for more information, but I'll have to ask you for some things in your own words. First, though, I may as well inform you of what I do have to go on. You're a natural flyer, House Seeker, correct?"
Harry nodded shortly.
"That may well be core magic. It may not. You'll have a couple of sessions with Botan to see which. If it is core magic, there's a small, very small, possibility you could manifest a broom. I also checked that sword of yours, the one you killed the basilisk with. There are no charms on it, so you probably have some magic with swordsmanship, by virtue of the fact that you didn't cut your own fool head off. You'll be working with Hiei and Kuwabara on that. Your parcel tongue is an acquired core magic, but you still should practice it. I'll see what I can do about getting a snake for you to talk to, but you might have to make do with a painting. Now,"
She leaned back and folded her hands over her stomach. I would like to know what magical accidents you can recall having as a child, and then your perspective on the last 4 years here at Hogwarts.
Harry bit his lip. You aren't recording this, are you? He asked warily.
Of course not, Potter. Whatever you say stays in this room, and our two heads. No pensives, no news articles, no gossip.
Well, I guess. That was, perhaps, the best promise he could get. I think the first accident I remember was when Aunt Petunia cut most of my hair short.
Kurama flicked easily through a sheaf of papers, his eyes needing bare seconds to glean the pertinent information from Genkai's notes. The woman had a helpful habit of summarizing her observations at the top of the page and scribbling the details over the remaining space. Reshuffling the pages into an order that would probably only make sense to him, he put the few students that he might consider tutoring at the top. There weren't many. Quest class skills like Kurama's, when a person could put their power into an object, multiply it by the object's own power, and manipulate it at will, were rare. It was a shock to have found any in the school, much less a potential plant master. But Kurama could take some of the burden away from Hiei and Kuwabara, helping to train the students who created weapons of any sort. Oddly, the Hufflepuffs and Ravenclaws had more of those students than the Gryffindors and Slytherins, but all of them manifested blunt weapons, staffs and clubs, whereas the latter houses only created weapons with blades. He said as much aloud.
You're right, Yusuke said, surprised. Weird. But what's with all these funny-named classes? I thought class was about strength. S-class, A-class, B-class, and all that.
It's a translation problem in part, Kurama said. Makai Kamen has two words that equate to class in Japanese.
Genkai spoke up. The classes you're familiar with are power levels, and are labeled with letters. S, A, B, C, and on down. Getting weaker until they start going into numbers around E-class. These classes, with actual words as labels, refer to different types of core magic.
There was a pregnant pause. Finally, Yusuke said, So, what are they? Genkai plucked Yusuke's papers from his hands and spread them out on the table, rearranging them into several piles. She pointed at a single sheet in its own pile.
Here's one of your classes, Yusuke. Rogue class, with the Weasley twins, luck and inventions magic, all but untrainable because the powers are used unconsciously from birth, or in your case, from death. It's really a subtle warping of space-time, putting the user in the exact right spot at the right time, or it can put objects in exactly the right spot at the right time. I suspect the twins use both. But they're so closely entwined, there's no point in figuring out who uses which.
Her finger landed on another paper, this one at the top of one of the thicker stacks.
This is your main class, Gauntlet, Self-Enhancement and Reinforcement. It's borderline with Knight, Kuwabara's class, manifestation of a weapon, in your case.
Really? Huh. Yusuke sounded oddly interested, Kurama noticed. Perhaps because this was... sort of, about fighting, rather than academics. Yusuke would be more curious about information he could apply immediately to real-world experiences, and his idea of real-world was delinquency and fighting. Yusuke waved a hand at the rest of the piles.
So, what are all of those?
Genkai muttered.
Let me think. Easier to do this in order. Castle class, healing and shielding magics. Yukina, Bones, Cornfoot. Oracle, Premonitions and Clairvoyance. Kuwabara, Brown, the Patils. Divine, Sight Magic. Zambini, Lee. Keiko, put the quill away. You don't need to take notes on this.
Keiko sheepishly set her pen down, letting Genkai continue.
Siren, Sound Magic. Finnegan. Forest, Scent and Inhaled Magics. Goldstein, Turpin. Ember, shapeshifters. I wish we had an animagus other than McGonagall. She's far too busy to tutor. There are a surprising number of those, too. Boot, greengrass. Province,
Remote-controlled powers. The Thomas boy. Quest. Kurama. Longbottom. Possibly Ron Weasley. Dragon. Elementals. Yukina again. Draco Malfoy.
Perfect name, Botan murmured, giggling.
Philosopher. Converting matter into magic and back again. They had a stone here a few years ago with spells to make it a core magic object, rather like Hiei's Jagan, only of the philosopher class. Net class. Merging magics. That's you, Keiko.
Is that what I did? Keiko asked quietly, the question rhetorical.
That'll be fun to experiment with, Kurama commented. Maybe he could convince her to experiment with some of his plants and the other students. Or even his plants and Hiei. He didn't have nearly enough fire-resistant plants, and there was no such thing as one made from fire. But he would have to wait until she'd had some practice and better control.
There will be no reckless experimenting, Genkai said, echoing the strongly Shuichi ending to that thought. Where was I? Net class. Night class. Manifestation of a weapon. The most common class. Or of a pen. Granger. Gauntlet. Self-enhancement. The most simple-minded class.
Hey! Yusuke protested, obviously remembering that Genkai had placed him in this class minutes ago.
Crab, Goyle, Toguro.
Why the hell are you comparing me to them?
Why not? Genkai smirked. Feast class. Power consumption. Parkinson, Byakko, Toguro again. Crucible, or Black Magic. Koku Ryuha, Hopkins, Macmillan.
I thought Macmillan's core magic was gossip, Keiko objected.
Spreading rumors and lies, shredding reputations, tearing down decent and indecent people alike? Mobs? Where else would you put it?
Oh.
Disseminating important information, quality control on rumors, giving false information to the enemy. Properly trained, it wouldn't be that bad, Botan pointed out.
No power trained and used properly is that bad, and vice versa. For instance, so-called white magic includes the ward that held Yukina prisoner, Genkai responded.
Hiei hissed, and she wisely finished the list.
Then rogue class, and last is catch-all for unique and unclassified magics.
Kurama returned to his examination of his papers. Genkai had given a rather good summary, for doing it off the top of her head.
It would have been easier to just make them look it up themselves, Hiei muttered.
Kurama hid a smile. But that would have taken more time. Better to just get it out of the way now.
Hiei shrugged, and Kurama let the subject drop.
It was nearly pitch black in the Slytherin fifth-year boys' dorm, with no moon to stream light from the sky or reflect it from the lake. Very little of the castle's lamplight reached this far down, past the ramparts and the cliff and the sheer distance. A couple of lanterns shone meagerly at the docks, but for the most part, the only light in the dorm came from the stars. It wasn't really enough to see by. It was enough, though, that Draco could see his hands as he sat on the windowsill, in just his uniform shirt and a pair of thin trousers. Pale as he was, his hands looked as cold as they felt. The wind had picked up off the lake, and Draco had put out the fire along with the lamps. Bloodless. The word passed swiftly through Draco's mind and slid away, into the dark chill. His hands looked and felt bloodless, no warmth reaching them from his body. But his pulse fluttered at his wrist. If Draco imagined it wasn't blood flowing through his veins, it must be magic. And with that, he could almost see it. A soft, liquid light running through a complex web through his hands. Or was the intricate structure merely hand-shaped? Flowing in smooth pulses. It was liquid. It flowed. It could flow right out of the hand shape and pool in his palms. If he just pushed. Just a little. Yes. Some of the light liquid puddled in his cupped hands, but it didn't sit still like water. It was lumping, No, beating. Like water droplets on glass. That was okay. Let it bead. Small droplets froze quicker than large ones. And that was the point here. He couldn't keep it if it wasn't solid, and his hands were so cold it could happen. It should happen. The door slammed against the wall, and Draco came to himself with a jolt. Who left the lights off? It was Blaze. Leave it, Draco rasped. Draco? A footstep as Blaze tried to navigate the room. Go away. I'm almost done. A moment of silence. Then, I never saw you. If you don't want anyone else to, you'd better be quick. They won't be more than a couple more minutes. Good. Right. Out. The door closed, considerably more quietly, and Draco carefully poured the tiny quartz crystals he'd made into a handkerchief, tied it securely closed, and slipped it into his pocket. He took up his wand. Lumos, he murmured, shutting his eyes as the lights flared too brightly. Blinking rapidly as his eyes adjusted, he slipped back into the rest of his school uniform, laced up his shoes, and left the room. He could sneak into the bathroom, tidy up, and return just in time to be seen returning. Blaze would be suspicious if he didn't do that, since he would if he'd been snooping or setting a prank, making sure that everyone knew that he'd gotten away with it. Really, it wasn't taking that much effort to conceal that he'd been practicing core magic in his very own dorm room.